This is America on the Road on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Jack Nerad.
This is America on the Road, named Best Radio Show by the International Automotive Media Conference, and now in its 27th year on the air. Thanks for being with us as we bring you the latest automotive information from around the world. Elon Musk says Tesla Motors will cut 10% of its salaried workforce because of an impending recession. We'll have the details and our reactions to that coming up. Experts say the nation's electric grid needs a tune-up if we're to see a larger number of EVs on the road. So we'll give you the details on that in the next segment. We'll probably have some comment on that, too. America on the Road is brought to you by Mercury Insurance and DrivingToday.com. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury, so imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at DrivingToday.com/auto insurance. That's DrivingToday.com/auto-insurance. Hi, I'm Jack Nerad. With me is co-host Chris Teague. We're always glad to have Chris with us. He lives at one end of the country. I live at the other. Each week we get together to talk about cars, the car industry, what's going on car-wise. Chris, Father's Day is behind us. I'm curious, did you guys, you're a family man, obviously, you talk about it in each show. What did the Teague family do on Father's Day?
We actually had an amazing weekend, Jack. I was telling you before the show last week, half of my street on one side is closed down for construction, so there's no through traffic, which is not the busiest street ever, but we went from a little bit of traffic to almost none. So we invited all the neighbors down and had a block party in the middle of the street with grills and kids and everything. It was a lot of fun.
Awesome.
How was your weekend?
Oh, that sounds terrific. Mine was a little quieter than that. One of our daughters, our youngest daughter, is back with us now from college, and she's interning. Her summer vacation was a Sunday, and then she got right back to work, you know, as an intern. So we had that going on. It was a nice quiet, and I heard from my other daughters, so it was a nice Father's Day weekend for me. Tell us about the car you're going to be talking about this week.
I drove the 2022 Nissan Altima. It's the SR trim with the Midnight Edition package, so it's a very good-looking car. I can't wait to talk about it with you.
Yeah, I look forward to talking about that. I got the chance to drive the 2022 Volvo XC40 T5 all-wheel drive Inscription, in contrast to the XC40 Recharge all-electric, so we'll have some gasoline versus electric comparison here. We also have a terrific interview for you. Our special guest is David Crist. He is the Toyota Group Vice President. He's in charge of the Toyota brand. I had the chance to sit down with him for a wide-ranging, exclusive interview recently, and I think you'll find what he has to say, especially about electric cars, especially interesting.
This is America on the Road on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Jack Nerad.
Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nerad with you for news time and fascinating news. Of course, Elon Musk always seems to make news. I think he could blow his nose and it would make news somewhere. But this time around, he has revealed that Tesla is going to cut 10% of its salaried workforce over the next 3 months. That's interesting, because I think most of us think that Tesla is doing quite well. Certainly the stock is still high-flying. He said the cuts are only going to apply to salaried workers, so white-collar workers, quote-unquote. So it's basically a 3.5% reduction in total headcount. And he described this, I like his description in this story, the Reuters story about it, as not super material, was his quote. Probably pretty material to the people who are being laid off, but that's a whole different thing. I guess when you're a billionaire, maybe that doesn't seem all that material to you that you're laying off 10% of your workforce. I'm sure they'll find jobs elsewhere. There's concern about recession, and, you know, certainly the auto industry has been beaten up already. What's your take on all this? You know, Tesla laying off people, recession talk.
I agree with you that I think the person being laid off probably feels that this is a material change in their lifestyle, but from Musk, you know, for all of his bravado, he does have a pretty decent window into what's going on in the world. You know, they have factories in China and Germany, and they sell cars everywhere. So I can see where there might be some valuable insight there. But, you know, from a perspective of just the economy in general, we could end up in a situation where Prices are still not coming down due to the recession. Inflation is still where it is, and then people's wages are being depressed or are slowed through growth and through a recession. So we could end up in a situation where prices are still high and people just aren't making enough money to pay for these things, which is already the case for a lot of us. So I can see why he's worried and why they want to focus their resources on production as opposed to management. However, that's a big cut.
Yeah, it's a big cut, absolutely. And a lot of times companies will take something external, like talk of recession, and there's been a lot of talk of recession over the course of the last 2 weeks, just in the news generally, to make personnel cuts that they probably wanted to make anyway, right? They trim the workforce, okay, let's get rid of some of the chaff here and keep the wheat. And so maybe that's what they're doing here. Certainly it's not 100% that we're going to have a recession, and I certainly hope we don't. There's a lot of signs that say we might, though, given the fact that inflation is rising rapidly. We've now had interest rates boosted over the course of the last week or so, and pretty seriously. That's got to clobber the housing market, I would think. It's interesting that we're attacking inflation caused by energy policy by attacking monetary policy or by changing monetary policy. I don't quite understand that, but that's what we're doing. And, you know, this is not a show about economics, so I guess we'll leave it at that. Any other comments on this, Chris, before we move on?
No, I'll just say that I agree with your comment about perhaps cutting the workforce down as a planned action as opposed to a reaction to something that's happening. You know, I think Tesla, as a lot of companies did during the pandemic, went on a hiring spree to keep up with demand. And now they're realizing that maybe they, as you said, may need to cut some of the chaff. Or some of the fat, not that any of those people that are working there are fat or chaff, but from their view that, you know, that's an expense that they could be spared.
Yeah, exactly. And it's a life changer for all those people who are getting laid off. So our best wishes to them. And I'm certain that they will find gainful employment somewhere else. And so that's a good thing for them. Well, here's a story I found interesting, too. General Motors is raising the price of its Hummer EV by over $6,000. They're citing commodity and shipping costs as the reason for this. This is a big increase in price. This is a pickup truck. This is their all-electric pickup truck, of which they're very proud. It costs between $80,000 and $110,000. So that's a big hike in cost. You just don't see price increases like that very often. But it will come on vehicles that are not reserved by people already. Apparently, about 77,000 people have raised their hands and said, yeah, I want to buy one of these things. That's an awful lot of electric pickup trucks that cost $80,000 plus to sell. But the price hike will come after that. This is also good news for those people who have those bookings, because they'll probably be able to turn over that truck for, at least $66,000 more, just on the basis of the fact that that's going to be the new list price. How do you feel about that, Chris?
Yeah, I think we're going to see, well, first of all, we're already seeing some $200,000 auction listings for these vehicles. So the market for these is absolutely unlike anything I've ever seen. You know, a $6,000 price increase sounds like a lot, and it is. I mean, it's what, a 5%, almost 6% increase in price, depending on the base price. But it's not all that surprising. You know, we just got done talking about Tesla. They've raised prices across the board several times and on a few models multiple times, you know, throughout this year. And we've seen that from other automakers, too. I don't know that this makes me that much more comfortable. We talked a few weeks ago about direct sales to consumers. Dealer markups are something that everybody loves to hate on. But if the automaker is doing the markups for you, it really doesn't help to cut out the dealer. So kind of bogs that argument down a little bit.
Yeah, that is a very good point, Chris. Very good point. Apparently, General Motors is claiming, at least, that they have sucked up $5 billion in higher supply chain costs before they've gone to raising prices. They've done some price increases, and certainly they've cut expenses, but you know, that's a lot of money to suck up. Another automaker that's suffering from supply chain problems, of course, is Rivian. They had increased their prices 20%, and then people complained. Hey, don't do that. These are people who had already booked vehicles, so they rolled those prices back. It'll be interesting to see whether we're going to see this in non-EVs going forward, too, because the supply chain problem is certainly not confined to electric vehicles.
Yeah, the world certainly needs more affordable vehicles of all types, especially EVs. So it's discouraging to see that these steps being taken. I mean, I can understand why, but it's still discouraging to see it. That being said, you know, at least GMC took the step to not roll prices forward for people who had already placed orders. I think that was the thing you just mentioned. Rivian shot themselves in the foot doing that. So they at least said, you know, if you already have a reservation, we're not going to jack the price on you. But no good for future buyers.
Yeah, I'll tell you, if inflation is going up, at, you know, 8% a month or something like that, I mean, the figures are staggering how prices are increasing just all around. It's logical to think that the auto manufacturers would also have to deal with that and participate in it, for that matter. So we'll see how that will develop. Here's something that needs to develop if we're going to see more EVs, and that is the electric grid. And it's something you and I have talked about here. It's not heavily talked about, though. But there's some nonprofits that put together reports saying, hey, we need better electric grid technology. And there are great possibilities offered by a technology called vehicle-to-grid, or V2G. But that won't happen unless we do some upgrading. I think you've talked about that. Certainly, living in Maine, the electrical grid is a bit of a challenge there. Sometimes it's a challenge here in Southern California as well. Sometimes I think we're living in a third world country here in Southern California with brownouts. But the grid is very, very critical to the success of electric vehicles, isn't it?
Yeah, I agree. And, you know, I talk a lot about the quantity or the numbers of chargers that we have here, but I think it's important. And I'm far from an engineer, so I won't go too deep into something I don't understand. But it's also important to understand that tons of electric vehicles place a load on the system, and so the system can only handle so many things placing a load on it. You mentioned brownouts in Southern California. Texas had issues with everyone trying to heat their homes a few years ago, and you know, when it gets really hot, everyone using air conditioners. So what's that going to do when people need to charge their cars as well, and especially if they're doing that at home? So I can see that this is going to take some work. I have no idea what the price is going to be, but it's almost impossible to believe that it'll be cheap.
Yeah, absolutely true. Well, something that isn't cheap either are autonomous vehicles, and maybe we will see them from makers like Mercedes-Benz. They are saying, Mercedes-Benz is saying, they're going to stand behind, from a liability point of view, their SAE Level 3 autonomous technology. This is the trickiest, I think, of all the technologies, Chris, because this is the thing where the car largely drives itself, but if something goes wrong, the driver has to take over at an instant's notice. And I think that's very difficult to see how that transition is going to work well in many situations. What's your quick take on Level 3 tech from Mercedes-Benz and them saying that they will take on this liability?
Yeah, I think it's a good thing for drivers, right? So, you know, you think about it from the driver's perspective, you're in a car that says it can control itself, and then you're asked to take control at a moment's notice. The decisions that the car might have been making up until that point might not have been the decisions that you as the person inside of it would have made. So would you preserve yourself versus preserving a group of other people? The car would likely choose to kill one person as opposed to seven or eight. So I could see how that would be frightening. But Mercedes doing this is a signature of confidence in their system, and it provides a level of confidence for the drivers, knowing that if the car does do something that is, you know, out of the ordinary or whatever the case might be, they're not going to get sued. Or at least if they do, Mercedes will theoretically step in and take the blame.
Well, after hearing that, I'm not so confident, but there we go. You know, how many are we going to kill? I'm not wild about that. Well, when we come back, we're going to be doing some road testing on a happier note. Chris will be testing the Nissan Altima SR Midnight Edition. I will be road testing the Volvo XC40. So stay with us for that right here on America on the Road.
This is America on the Road on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Jack Nierab.
Welcome back to America on the Road with Chris Teague, Jack Nierad with you. And it's road test time. Fascinating vehicles we have. We don't test that many Nissan vehicles. And Chris, you were driving a Nissan Altima, one of their bread and butter vehicles. Why don't you tell us about that?
I did get to spend the week with Nissan, the Nissan Altima. And you're correct. I don't also see a lot of those in the fleet here, but it's always a treat to get to test them when they come out. I will start by saying Nissan is going to refresh the Altima for 2023. It's going to get a light facelift and some new technology. This car that I'm driving and that we're talking about today is the 2022 model. So it's the one that you can currently buy at a local dealer, assuming that they're not all sold out. and the one that's been on sale for a few years. I was testing the SR trim, which is the next to highest trim below the Platinum model, with the Midnight package, which is an appearance package that brings 19-inch wheels, blacked out exterior trim. And it's a very sharp looking car, but in any case, the SR trim with the SR trim with the Midnight Edition package starts at around $28,000, a little bit more than $28,000. The top Platinum model starts at just shy of $36,000. So these are pretty good values, Jack. I think that for the price, you get a lot. My SR trim came with all-wheel drive, which is pretty rare in the segment. The Altima competes against the Accord and the Hyundai Sonata, neither of which offer those. The Camry does. And the Subaru Legacy does. Have you had a chance to get behind the current Altima, Jack? And what do you think about it?
I have driven the current Altima. I have not driven an all-wheel drive, and I'm kind of regretting the fact that you probably don't have snow there in Maine at the end of June here, because I think that would be interesting. And I think we're seeing more and more all-wheel drive vehicles, some because they're electrified, and that's fairly easy to do. But this is not that, but I think it's an advantage for the Altima.
Yeah. And, you know, most people, my wife made fun of me when I moved here to Maine. I got an all-wheel drive car. She'd been driving rear-wheel drive and front-wheel drive cars forever with nice snow tires, and they do just the same, according to her. So I think that, you know, this gives buyers just that level of confidence, especially if they live in a place like I do where the air hurts your face for at least a few months of the year. In any case, Nissan offers the Altima of two different powertrains. The one that I tested, it came with a turbocharged 2.5-liter four-cylinder engine. It makes 182 horsepower in all-wheel drive models. The front-wheel drive models get 188 horsepower. Nissan makes what they call a VC turbo engine. It's a variable compression turbo engine. It makes 248 horsepower. That is available for the SR trim only with front-wheel drive. And the car comes with a continuously variable transmission. Now, Jack, you and I have talked at length about CVTs, continuously variable transmissions, how they kind of blunt the driving experience. They can let the engine whine at times. And it just feels a little squishy when it's compared to like a 6-speed or an 8-speed or so on automatic transmission. And we've also talked about Nissan's efforts on these gearboxes. And I think that this is a good example of how well they've been able to engineer this thing to be usable and I won't say engaging, but at least to stay out of the way. So this is not a transmission that lets the engine wail away on the highway. It doesn't whine or drone. And when you're driving around at city speeds, you can barely tell that there are no gears being shifted under you at all. So very refined, very smooth operation of the powertrain. I mean, I will say that 182 horsepower is a little loose for this car. I think, you know, 225 would probably be a good sweet spot. But I guess that's why they hold back the turbocharged VC engine for the higher
spoken like an auto enthusiast on the radio. Absolutely, Chris.
Yeah. And Jack, I don't know if you've driven the variable compression engine, and I'd like to get your thoughts on it, but what do you think about it compared to the regular four-cylinder engines in these cars?
From a technical point of view, an engineering point of view, a theoretical point of view, it's super cool. I think in actuality, though, it doesn't strike me that you get that much more performance or fuel economy than you would get from just a well-tuned turbocharged engine of the same displacement. So congratulations on the engineering. I'm not seeing that as a big advantage to anybody in the real world.
Yeah, you're right there. It's almost like they did it just because they could. But I think, you know, like you say, the engineering there is impressive. In any case, all but the base Altima for 2022 come with an 8-inch touchscreen. It runs Apple CarPlay, Android Auto. Nissan's infotainment system is not the most colorful or the most flashy, but it is fairly intuitive. After a day, I was able to use it without much thought. The touchscreen is responsive. So all these are things that help reduce distraction while you're driving. So big help there. The car comes standard with a list of safety features. Ford collision warnings, automatic emergency braking. My car being a higher trim got blind spot monitoring, rear cross traffic alerts. So Jack, I have to say, I haven't driven a recent Altima, and this was a good change for me to see what the car is all about. I can't wait for the 2023 model, but I think if it carries the same value that this car does, it'll be a compelling buy and a must see for anybody shopping in the segment, even if there are better offerings out there.
Yeah, I think it's certainly worth a look. And, you know, I love these mid-size sedans, and the Altima has always been a good one. So certainly worth taking a look at. Well, I was driving a vehicle that is in the middle of a growing field of luxury vehicles. These are luxury brand compact crossovers, and the vehicle I'm testing is the Volvo XC40. We have talked about the XC40 Recharge on the show fairly recently. I tested a more conventional gasoline-powered version of the vehicle this time around, but there's some pretty cool vehicles in this segment. The BMW X1, the Lexus UX200. Yes, the UX200, probably forgotten by many. And the Mercedes-Benz GLA, the GLA 250, all competing for the same buyer here. This is a very distinctive-looking car. The vehicle I was driving had all-wheel drive, of course, bundled with the T5 powertrain. That's the up-level powertrain, until you go to the Recharge. And I will tell you a little bit more about that as I get to powertrain here. But I had an inscription version. It's the most luxurious model in the lineup. The MSRP is over $40,000, but less than $50,000. Nice interior trim, including real wood. I love the way Volvo treats the wood. It actually looks like wood. It doesn't look like shiny plastic, which I think is cool. It has good stuff like 8-way power adjustable driver and front passenger seats, power-operated lumbar support, dual-zone climate control, very important in this segment, 19-inch alloy wheels. So, you know, good array of stuff. Let me tell you a bit about the powertrain. It's 2-liter four-cylinder engine, as is practically every European vehicle out there. It's kind of amazing, the number of 2-liter four-cylinders that are on the market. In this form, it is turbocharged. It delivers 248 horsepower, which is a nice amount of horsepower. Reasonable level of peak torque, 258 pound-feet, uses an 8-speed automatic transmission. All of that is good. It compares well to the other gasoline-powered cars in the segment. It doesn't compare very well at all to the XC40 Recharge that offers 402 horsepower. Give me your take on the powertrains in these various XC40s, Chris. I'm curious as to how you feel about them.
You know, I always, how do I want to say this? I love the way Volvo does its powertrains, but I think sometimes they favor complexity over everything else. So we're talking about the XC40, the T5 powertrain is a turbocharged 2-liter. If you go to the XC90, you step up to a T6, you get a supercharged and turbocharged engine. So there's some complexity there. I will say that the engine in the XC40, the 248 horsepower, doesn't sound like a ton, but it is a good amount for a vehicle that size. It feels lively. And, you know, outside of some rough sounds here and there, it's a pretty responsive and decent powertrain to deal with on a daily basis.
Yeah, I like it too. And one of the other things I like about the XC40 is just the interior is real sweet to me. I think it's beautifully styled. I think the craftsmanship is excellent. There's plenty of room inside. Volvo wasn't afraid to make this vehicle fairly tall, and that contributes to interior space. There's a good amount of cargo space behind the second row seats. Oddly, the BMW X1 has more. I wouldn't have guessed that until I did the math on it, but that's interesting. I wouldn't say that the XC40 had the precision handling of the BMW X1 either, but on the other hand, the ride quality is pleasant. I think people who buy this vehicle will be very happy with this vehicle. It's equipped with the Volvo Sensus infotainment system, 9-inch touchscreen interface. Not the most intuitive of all time. And I think, Chris, you've experienced that too, haven't you?
I do. There's a ridiculous amount of swiping required to get anything done with that system.
Sometimes I feel like just calling you when I'm driving one of these, Chris, because I know you're a Volvo driver and getting a short course in how this works. Great safety technology, as you would anticipate from Volvo. It has the city safety array, collision warning with automatic braking. It has pedestrian and cyclist detection, large animal detection, too. Small animals, they're on their own, but it will detect large animals. And oncoming traffic collision mitigation, that's always good. I don't like those head-ons, and I want those mitigated in every way, shape, or form. So, you know, this is a vehicle that I think stacks up really well. It's much less expensive than the all-electric version. This is kind of a heads-up comparison. It has a lot less horsepower, but, boy, it's priced a lot less and a lot easier to live with maybe day-to-day in most situations. So I think we've got really some great driver's cars here in the Nissan Altima and the Volvo XC40.
I agree.
And when we come back, we will be speaking with David Crist. He is the group vice president in charge of the Toyota division at Toyota Motor Sales USA. So stay with us for that insightful interview. And with Chris Teague, this is Jack DeRed with you. We're glad you're with us. Stay with us. We'll be back right after this. America on the Road is brought to you by Mercury Insurance and DrivingToday.com. If you're looking to save some money, you should switch to Mercury for your auto and home insurance. Californians save an average of $670 with Mercury. So imagine how much you could save. Get a quote today at DrivingToday.com/auto insurance. That's DrivingToday.com/auto-insurance. And if you're looking to buy a new car or used car, or just care about cars, visit DrivingToday.com. DrivingToday.com, the official automotive website of America on the Road.
This is America on the Road on the Sports Map Radio Network. Here's Jack Nierab.
Welcome back, everybody, to America on the Road. Jack Nierab with you. We are inside, literally inside, the Toyota headquarters with the guy who's running the brand. David Crist is the Group VP and General Manager of Toyota. Thanks so much for being with us, number one.
Jack, thanks. Great to be with you.
It's such a pleasure to be here. You've showed us so much. It's hard to scratch the surface, but you've unleashed a bunch of products here. Why don't we kind of dive into that a little bit before we talk about maybe larger issues?
Happy to. We've got a lot of great stuff coming. You know, we just launched the BZ4X, which is our first countrywide available all-electric battery electric vehicle. Phenomenal product, really exciting. The first customers that have purchased them have had nothing but great things to say about it. So we're really excited about our path to even more electrification. And we're about to launch Sequoia, which is an absolute home run product, really going to expand the segment. And we have a lot of loyal Sequoia buyers who have owned our products for many years, who've been waiting for the new one. Happy to tell you late summer.
Yeah, and
summer.
This is a full-size three-row SUV.
Correct.
Big market, a lucrative market, I've got to believe, as well, right? A lot of people are spending big money on these vehicles in some volume, so
correct.
It's got to be exciting for you.
Yeah, we expect to at least triple our volume in Sequoia, so we're going to be covering all the people that have waited for Sequoia, along with some new people that are new to the brand. We've got a lot of other great stuff coming with the GR brand, Gazoo Racing brand, which is going to bring some really exciting sports car products to the market. GR86 is going to be phenomenal. We're starting a single make series there where regular everyday people can race, and that's going to be really exciting. We've got a GR Corolla coming, which we launched a few weeks ago, and that has been huge interest in the GR Corolla. The development of that car was personally overseen by Akio Toyota, our company president, who's also a race car driver. So that's pretty exciting. And we've got a lot of other great stuff coming.
You've taken Corolla in some interesting ways, right? I mean, it used to be kind of, this is it, you know, nice conventional transportation car. Now you've taken it in some various directions, haven't you?
Yeah, so we made a decision several years ago to stay in the sedan business, and we think that was a really great decision. A lot of people don't necessarily want a big SUV or a big pickup truck, and Corolla
or are able to afford one, for
correct,
that matter.
Correct, and the Corolla is a great offering. We get a lot of new people to the brand in Corolla, and now with GR Corolla, we're really going to spice it up a bit and have a really fun-to-drive Corolla at the top of the Corolla lineup. So we're very proud of Corolla. It's been around a long time, very successful product, and it's a huge value.
Were you kind of jealous of the way the media would treat Honda Civic Si, and did that in some ways lead a little bit to making Corolla a bit sportier and the GR series and those kind of things?
Well, we don't get jealous. We just get to work. So Honda makes some great cars, and anytime we have a competitor that comes out with a competitive product, we evaluate it and we figure out what we can do to make our product even better, and it keeps us pushing forward. And I'm happy to say GR Corolla has been a huge hit amongst the press that are here at our event, and I think we've had over 70,000 people raise their hand for more information about GR Corolla. So that in and of itself, given the volume we're going to do, is an enormous comment on how successful the car is going
to
be.
And I've got to believe those vehicles, the GR Corollas, would be incremental to other Corollas would sell. Probably.
They are. And they're engineered and designed differently, more born from the track kind of thinking. The
manual transmission.
The manual transmission, which is making a comeback. So we're excited to have them in the lineup.
And talk about Corolla Cross. I think that is such a cool vehicle. it strikes me as spot on for the marketplace, and you're doing some interesting things with that as well, aren't you?
Yeah, so we launched Corolla Cross in the fall, and it was an effort to create an SUV underneath RAV4 in size and price to really open up the ability for a young person to have a Toyota SUV. It's been a huge success. We're selling them really well. Consumer feedback has been exceptional. And we launched here a Corolla Cross Hybrid, which will sell in the fall. And the advantage to that is obviously it brings a hybrid powertrain to it, which is more efficient and has more horsepower than the gas variant, and also has the space and the utility that people have come to love in the Corolla Cross. And it's a great place for people that want to downsize or people that want to get into the brand for the first time, and it's transacting really well.
Do you think Toyota customers, and customers in general, but let's talk about Toyota customers, are understanding that there's more to a hybrid than just great fuel economy? Because there certainly is, isn't there?
Yeah, so we were the first manufacturer to develop a hybrid, starting with the Prius 23 years ago. Since then, we've sold millions of them. That has resulted in a lot of carbon reduction for the planet. So we're very proud of our hybrid history. Last year, we sold about 25% of our entire Toyota lineup was a hybrid. So we take electrification very seriously. And the advantage to hybrids for the consumer is typically they're more efficient from a gas mileage standpoint than a gas engine. And secondly, many of them have more horsepower and torque. So it's a little bit more fun to drive as well. So it's really a win-win for the environment and for the consumer.
Yeah, absolutely. In a lot of ways, it's free horsepower. Right?
Yep.
Who can say no to that? Right?
There you go.
Let's talk about Gazoo Racing specifically, you know, what that means to the Toyota brand going forward.
So Gazoo Racing is a great part of the company. Gazoo started as a true on-track racing team, and our CEO and president, Akio Toyota, raced under the name Marizo. And that inspired the company to start a division that really focused on building cars that are born from the track, as we like to say, meaning they start as race cars, and then they become brought down to the public in a car you can have fun in every day. And the GR cars we're coming out with, the GR86, GR Supra, and GR Corolla, all have elements and design, both design and performance characteristics that we learned and fine-tuned on the track. So anyone buying a GR product knows that this has been a really well thought through product that started on the track.
Give us a little more on the racing series that you're planning that you know, just individuals can probably get into without mortgaging two or three of their homes.
Yeah, right? So Toyota Racing, our division that handles all of our NASCAR and motorsports events and activities, are actually selling the cars. It is a GR86 vehicle, although it is really built for the track. It is open to the public, so you need to buy one from Toyota Racing. And then you can enter, I think it's 17 races in 7 locations across the country. And it's really going to be a lot of fun.
Hey, it's kind of, it's not only a one design series, but also isn't maintenance or car prep part of the deal? Tell us about that.
Yeah, so each team is going to need to handle their own, repairing and fixing of the cars if they hit the wall or those kinds of things. But it really opens up and makes it more democratic, the ability to get into racing. And it gives people an option that can get into racing without, you know, starting at the bottom of a race team on a more advanced circuit.
Let's talk about electrification, because it is different for Toyota than it is for what we hear kind of broadly in the press, right? I mean, certainly you've been the leader in hybrids for better part of 3 decades now, where others turned up their nose at hybrids, never did them or did them and walked away from it or whatever. Now we're seeing some mild hybrids coming back into the market. But tell us where Toyota is in terms of electrification.
So we really believe in a menu approach. We believe in developing technology in multiple formats and letting the consumer choose. So as I mentioned, we started the hybrid craze with the Prius 23 years ago. The Prius has been phenomenally successful, both for the brand and for the consumers that drive it, because it's a really economical way to get around and very good for the environment. Well, since then, we've grown hybrids across our lineups, and we have them for sale, as I mentioned, almost 25% of our volume last year was hybrids. So we kind of know how to do hybrids, and we've been very successful at doing hybrids. We also have plug-in hybrids, which really are great options for people that want to plug in, but also want to have the flexibility for longer trips to not have to plug in. So we sell the RAV4 Prime, which has been an enormous success. That's a RAV4 that plugs into the wall but also has a gas engine.
It's so successful you can't buy one, right?
So successful they're sold out. And then, you know, the other thing that we, as I mentioned, just launched is the BZ4X, which is an all-electric BEV. In addition to that, in the state of California, we sell a fuel cell vehicle called Mirai. And that's been enormously successful with hydrogen technology in giving the customer another option. So we really have four different powertrains, four different technologies that we want to offer to the customer so that they can pick what's right for them. A BEV might be great if you have a garage with a home charger, but it might not be great if you live in a condominium or you rent an apartment. So we really want to have that menu approach where it's up to the consumer to pick which technology works for them and their lifestyle. And we think that's a really important differentiator for Toyota.
Yeah, and it will be going forward, it strikes me. When a lot of other brands are at least saying they're going all BEV, all battery electric, in a fairly short period of time, this, even given the fact that we're looking at, I think battery electric is something like 6% market share in that order right about now. That's been a big gain, but 6% sure is not 100%.
Sure.
It's not 50%, right? Sure. How are you approaching that beyond what you've already told us?
Yeah, so great question. You know, as far as our strategy on electrification, we really run our own race. We know what other brands have announced, and we know what we can do. The reality is that we have plans to grow our all-electric vehicles, both in volume of the vehicles we sell today, but also across our lineup into other categories. So we know we're going to be very firmly planted in the electrified space, and we already are with our hybrid sales. We're going to grow each of those categories, so more hybrids, more plug-in hybrids, more battery electric vehicles, and hopefully with the expansion of the infrastructure of hydrogen, more hydrogen offerings as well. You know, when we look at our strategy, we really look at it from consumer up. So we say, what does the consumer need? And we think right now the consumer needs choices, and we provide them for them.
I'd love to talk about hydrogen fuel cell vehicles like the Mirai, because there's so much about it that in a lot of ways it's very analogous to a gasoline car, right? You fill the vehicle up kind of in the same manner, or at least with the same speed. So range is not that big an issue if you had infrastructure to follow that. I don't see anybody else really, or darn few manufacturers even dipping their toe into hydrogen. Where do you think that has a place or can go?
Yeah, so we've been a strong supporter of hydrogen and very active in helping to improve the infrastructure. So it's a little bit of a chicken or egg discussion, yeah. Meaning, you know, does the infrastructure come first and the infrastructure suppliers are reluctant to put the infrastructure in without volume of vehicles to use the infrastructure? And the other side of that coin is, you know, if we sell too many hydrogen vehicles as an industry and the infrastructure isn't ready for it, it's not a good customer experience.
It could kill the technology, really.
That's right. Yeah. So they really need to grow together, meaning the infrastructure needs to come along with the volume. There are other brands selling hydrogen vehicles, but we not only are the lion's share of the segment at over 70%, we're also kind of on the front line of the discussion with the states and the municipalities to say this is a great option for the environment, and we really need to get behind it.
Yeah, well, it's exciting, and this is exciting times.
Absolutely, absolutely.
So, David, Chris, thanks so much for talking with us. I really do appreciate it.
Jack, thanks for having me.
And stay with us, everybody. We'll be right back right here on America on the Road.
This is America on the Road on the SportsMap Radio Network. Here's Jack Nierab.
Welcome back to America on the Road. It is our final segment. It seems like the time just goes so fast when we're talking about cars, Chris. But thanks so much for being with us. With Chris Teague, this is Jack Nierad with you. And we're taking questions. And I have an excellent, what I believe is an excellent listener question. Let's hope we have an equally excellent answer to Rico in Pacific Beach, California, who says this. It seems like nobody is really talking about cars these days. All the people I know now drive SUVs. is there a sedan or two out there that you guys think is really cool?
I do think there are a few out there that are really cool. We were just talking, Jack, over the break about the Honda Civic Si. I think is an excellent value. It's got a great transmission. It's a manual transmission, some great performance. And the price is well below $30,000 to start. If you want to move up to the midsize segment, you can't go wrong with a Honda Accord or a Toyota Camry, although we did just talk about the Nissan Altima. Still a good choice, even though it's going to be refreshed next year. So I think you have some great choices outside of the luxury segment. If you're looking at luxury cars, BMW's M cars are a great performance. They're not a value, I was going to say that, but you can't really go wrong there either. So there are plenty of sedans out there. Jack, what do you think?
Well, the one I identified immediately when I saw this question was a vehicle I've driven fairly recently, and that's the Mercedes-Benz C-Class. It is just cool all the way around. It is a mini S-Class. The tech is amazing. The interior screen is terrific. But I shouldn't dwell on that. I should dwell on the driving experience because it's a blast to drive. It really takes that car in a higher performance level, and when we see the AMG version, I think it's really going to be hot. But I really like what Mercedes-Benz has done with the C-Class. I think it's a terrific car. I think some might have scoffed when you said Camry, but there are some really interesting Camrys these days with some performance potential, look pretty cool. I think there are sedans out there, you know, worthy of note these days.
I totally agree with that.
Chris, thanks so much for being with us. We appreciate it.
Thanks, Jack, for sitting across the country from me while we do this. And thanks, everybody, for listening. If you like what you heard and you want to take us with you, you can find our podcast on the Sports Map Radio website. If you head to the Saturday schedule there, you can find on every major platform our regular podcast as well as a formatted radio version of the show.
Absolutely, you can. And our thanks to the Sports Map Radio Network stations for carrying America on the Road. We appreciate that. And most of all, thanks to you for listening to America on the Road. You're the reason we do what we do here on America on the Road. We're here to help, and we'd love to help you. So join us each week and join us again next time right here for another edition of America on the Road.